Blog Talk Radio.
We've got some difficult days ahead, but it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place, but I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And He's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And He's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
This is Dr. Martin Luther King Movement tonight. Sister Mary, if you're on the line, press 1 on your phone. Because tonight we're going to talk about man going back to the moon. And what the moon means to man and to God. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Mary Hawkins, if you're on the phone, press 1 on your phone. I'll open up. I want you to read 27. Now, this is the Dr. King Movement. And we're talking about going back to the moon. Hey, Dr. King, we're going to the moon. We've been there. What did we do when we was there? Okay? Everybody said we're going back to the moon. What we going back to the moon for? And what we're going to obtain from the moon, okay? I'm going to have Mary to read the 23rd number. So I see your hands up. Thank you. I want to say happy Labor Day to everybody that's listening. Happy birthday to Sister Walker. Happy birthday. To Brother Shane up in Minnesota. Happy birthday. And Mary, you can read the 23rd number of Sunday on your morning tonight.
The manhunt and a deadly mass stabbing in Canada is intensifying. For Tony St. One of the
problems.
Yes.
You can read the same in the song.
Okay, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leaded me beside the still waters, and He restored my soul. He leaded me in the path of righteousness for His namesake. Nay, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for Thou art with me, Thy rod and Thy staff, they comfort me. Thou prepares a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil, my cup running over. Truly, goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Amen. I just read the number. Come on, song.
God bless you tonight. This is Dr. King Movement, and this is Labor Day. And then people talk about going back to the moon. And I want to tell you, in the beginning, God created everything. God made the moon, the stars, and everything. God put that in place. And we're going to talk a little bit about going back to the moon. Genesis chapter 1, chapter 2, and chapter 3. Psalms 119. We're talking about man going to the moon. We're talking about going back to the moon. How can you handle the moon? You can't handle the earth. God made the moon, the stars, the sun. God made all that in his image and his likeness. Why do men want to go and rule the moon when you're not ruling the earth? So it's important to understand where man at. Man going to the moon.
In the book of Genesis, the first chapter, the 14th, and a few of the following verses, we read as follows. And God said, let there be light in the expanse of the heaven to separate day from the night. And let them be for signs and tokens of God's provident care, and to mark seasons, days, and years. And let them be for light in the expanse of the sky, to give light upon the earth. And it was so. And God made the two great lights, the greater light, the sun, to rule the day, and the lesser light, the moon, to rule the night. He also made the stars, and God set them in the expanse of the heaven to give light upon the earth. Man on the moon is the title of what we are talking about. I have chosen to read a passage from that part of the Bible that the great theologians call the creation ode, or a poetic interpretation of the creation of the world and the creation of things. We do not mean the passage from which I have read is a scientific record of how the earth came into existence, or how things or creatures came into existence, or even how the sun, moon, and the stars, or planets, came into existence. There are those who suggest that the Bible is in conflict with science, but this is not true. The Bible is not in conflict with science. Actually, the Bible reflects the scientific view of its time. For what the Bible have to say on the subject of science was science position as well as the Bible's position. Because the Bible being a religious document, it did reflect what science thought of the world and of creation at that time or stage in history. For when you read in the Bible that angels would stand on the four corners of the earth, the scientific view of the world at that time was that the world was four corners. Certainly science has evolved from that position now, but also the religious thought and the world of religion had also evolved. And our views are different at this particular time. Now, it is said that man has been on this planet somewhere between 500,000 and a million years. We frequently hear it being said from the pulpit and elsewhere that the creation of man was about 6,000 years ago. The Bible does not say any such thing. This is Bishop Buss's calculation, which has nothing to do with how long man had been there. According to the best scientific point of view or interpretation as it relates to man's historical existence on this planet, man has been here somewhere between 500,000 and a million years. Nobody knows exactly, but archaeologists have brought up things in their excavations that indicate that man has been here much longer than this particular historian suggests. Now, it is thought that creation took place somewhere in northern Africa, or this was man's original home, historically speaking, somewhere in the Euphrates Basin. You don't hear me. You know, people have gotten twisted around because they knew so little about themselves until they thought that man got started somewhere here in the West. You don't hear me. They think that man got started in England or somewhere. No, sir. Before England was known, or any other part of the Western world was known, civilization was flourishing, Reverend Holt, in Africa and Asia. But man's home was very small geographically speaking, when, or in his early days, his world was very small. I wish I had somebody here that would pray with me while I'm trying to talk to you. I said, man's early existence, his world was very small. wonder, therefore, the floods that he had, he thought they covered the earth. But his earth was so little. You don't hear me? And this is the point of view that's reflected in Noah's flood. When man writes about the flood that covered the world, you have to remember when you read it, the world for man at that time was very small. There was a time when the people in Homer's day, in the days of Socrates, Aristotle and Plato, or Demosthenes, thought that Greece was the center of the universe. Even though the world itself is a very, very small portion of the universe, the astrologists, the astronomers talk about the earth as being an out of the way planet in the universal scheme of things. It's not even the largest planet in the solar system that we know. And there are other solar systems, other constellations, galaxies upon galaxies that we don't know about. Other suns and moons that we don't know about. I wish I had somebody here pray with me. Now, let's go back here to the fact that man's world, to begin with, was very small. Very small. And of course, each time that his world expands, it frightens him. Did you hear me?
Dr. Franklin was talking about men going to the moon. And when you talk about Venus, Mars, and Saturn, the gods, man going to the moon, been already foretold in the Bible. There's Saturn, there's Jupiter, there's Mars, there's the sun, there's the moon. So men want to go to the moon.
When man's world moved from Africa and Asia and moved to the west, to Rome and elsewhere, it caused him great consternation and great fear, because he was expanding into the unknown. When Columbus ventured to find a new route to India and ended up discovering America, the continent of the Americas, people were afraid. People said that the world was flat and that man would sail and eventually drop off into nothingness to be swallowed up into the great greedy jaws of immensity. And of course, any time man expands and move out to new frontiers, it's like this. I'm sure when the great scientists and engineers, when the astronauts and all of their aides were getting ready to move on to the moon, we heard all kinds of negative is reminiscent of what they thought in 1492. I don't believe you hear me tonight. Did you know that some people have never written a play? Not to think of going to the moon. Because we harbor fear. I remember the time when I had my first plane ride. When the convention was in Chicago. I believe in 1943. People in Memphis, Tennessee, where I was living at the time, expressed all kinds of concern and fear. Because a few of us were going to ride from Memphis to Chicago on a plane. Talked about keeping one's feet on the ground. They wanted to keep contact with earth. But these are people who are not adventurers. These people are not starving. These people were not like the ancient Egyptians who were fascinated by the moon to the point that they created goddesses to the moon. They celebrated the moon in poetic lyrics. The Babylonians gave us a great deal of that learning about the moon and the stars. You don't hear me tonight. And of course, you have forgotten Copernicus. And
we've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land.
Dr. King is in Memphis. This is Dr. King meeting on Monday. We want to talk a little bit about black power. Black power is the stimulating power of the black man. We've been under white power so long. We don't even know what white, we don't even know what black power look like, smell like, talk like. But tonight I want to say black power to those that can think, can be educated. Black power means that you're able to master your own destiny, start your own business. Black power is a thing that come out of Africa. When I talk about black power, I'm talking about reparation. We've been under white power. We're under British power. And if you're in America, you're under white power. And in Mississippi, it was born black power. Lots of people don't want to deal with black power. They don't want to listen to what black power means. In the Dr. King movement, in the movement of SCLC, in the movement of the NAACP, NAAP, and all the community organization clubs, we now in 2022, going to 2023, we got to cry out black power, black economics, black together. Stop the killing, save the baby. So a lot's going on that we don't understand. maybe we can bring some light to where it all comes from. Racism, white supremacy is still real in America. We still fighting black against white, white against black. We still, that 95% of brothers and sisters in jail right now, political prisoners. Until we can deal with the power structure, we cannot go forward. The power, we need black power in the economic, in the judges. We need the power. We've been so under the white man power, under white power so long. We can't even say black power. And you're afraid to say it because you intimidate me when you talk about your race. We are the original, black America. Our mamas and daddies built New York, Chicago, Mississippi. So it's time for reparation. It's time for black power. When I say black power, it means that you got money, that you can be able to do something with it. And we're going to talk a little bit about black power.
We will refer you to a passage which reads, "And Ethiopia shall stretch forth her wings." In his book, "Where Do We Go From Here? Chaos or Community?" the beloved and lamented Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. tells us of a story of the beginning of the slogan, Black Power. James Meredith had just been shot outside of Memphis, Tennessee, as he attempted to lead a march through the state of Mississippi, beginning at Memphis and ending at Jackson, Mississippi, the capital of the state. After getting the news that Meredith had been shot, Dr. King, Stokely Carmichael, and Floyd McKissick met together at Memphis and agreed that the march would continue, that it would be sponsored jointly by CORE, SNCC, and SCLC, with the understanding that all other civil rights organizations would be invited to join. It was also agreed that they issue a national call for support and participation. Dr. King further says, "As the days progress, debates and discussions continue, but they were usually pushed to the background by the onrush of enthusiasm engendered by the large crowds that turned out to greet them in every town." Said he, "We had been marching for about 10 days when we passed through Grenada, Mississippi, on our way to Greenwood, Mississippi. Stokely did not conceal his eagerness to reach Greenwood, for this was SNCC territory, in the sense that the organization had worked courageously during the turbulent summer of 1964. Dr. King continues, "As we approached the city, large crowds of old friends and new turned out to welcome us, as a huge mass meeting was held that night, which was held in a city park Stokely mounted the platform. And after arousing the audience with a powerful attack on Mississippi justice, he proclaimed, "What we need is black power." Willie Ricks, the fiery orator of SNCC, leaped to the platform and shouted, "What do we want?" The crowd roared, "Black power." Again and again, Ricks cried, "What do we want?" And the response was, "Black power." And that response grew louder and louder until it reached a fever pitch. This was the beginning of the slogan, black power. I know that this particular expression has disturbed a lot of people, but I don't think if it is understood in the right context, if it is interpreted right, there's nothing wrong with black power any more than something, any more than there's nothing wrong with white power or Jewish power or Polish power. So Greenwood turned out to be the arena for the birth of the Black Power slogan. The phrase had been used long before by Richard Wright and others, but until that night, it had not been used as a slogan for the civil rights movement. Black people who have been crushed so long by white power, and who had been taught that black was degrading, it had a ready appeal. Dr. King goes on to say, black power is now a part of the nomenclature of the national community. So unto some, it is abhorrent. To others, dynamic. To some, it is repugnant. To others, it is exhilarating. To some, it is downright frightening. To others, it heralds a new day of unity for black people. Since black power means different things to different people, and indeed being essentially an emotional concept, can mean different things to the same person on different occasions. It is impossible to attribute its ultimate meaning to any single individual or organization. One must look beyond personal style, verbal flourishes, and the hysteria of the mass media to assess its value, its assets, and its liabilities honestly. First, it is necessary to understand that black power is a cry of disappointment. The black power slogan did not spring full grown from the head of some philosophical sage. It was born from the wounds of despair and disappointment. It is a cry of daily hurts and persistent pain. I don't believe I have anybody here to further me tonight. centuries, the Negro has been caught in the tentacles of witchcraft. Many Negroes have given up faith in the white majority because white power with total control has left them empty-handed. So in reality, the call for black power is a reaction to the failure of white power. It is no accident that the birth of this slogan in the civil rights movement took place in Mississippi, the state symbolizing the most blatant abuse of white power. In Mississippi, the murder of civil rights workers was a pastime. In that state, more than 40 Negroes and whites were either lynched or murdered during a period of 3 years. And not a single man was punished for those crimes. More than 50 Negro churches were burned or bombed. Yet the bombers walked the streets surrounded by a halo of adoration. This is white power in its most brutal and cold-blooded and vicious form. I wish I had somebody here to pray with me tonight. When we think of black power, we think of the black man having face. In the American translation of Psalms 42 and the 11th verse, it is written, "Wake thou, O God, for I shall again praise him, the salvation of my covenant and my God." The word salvation of my covenant bring to mind the Chinese phrase, saving face. The contrast between the two methods of saving face is a suggestive one. It symbolizes a choice in motives, in living, which essentially all must make. A chief end of man in China is to save face. It dominates the smallest action in personal relations and the most momentous procedures in diplomacy. Men live under the shadow of a hunting fear of the loss of prestige, position in the eyes of others. Everything, even life itself, is sacrificed to faith saving. But it is not confined to China. Bertrand Russell says, truly, in the daily lives of most men and women, fear plays a greater part than hope. They are more filled with the thought of the possessions that others may take from them than of the joy that they might create in their own lives and in the lives with which they come in contact. Here in the Psalms is another kind of faith-saving, which makes a vivid contrast when placed beside the withering obsession for prestige and appearance. Wait for the Lord. He is the salvation of my countenance. That is the real saving of face, the redemption of a life from the domain that his color is a sign of biological depravity, that his being has been stamped with an indelible imprint of inferiority, that his whole history has been soiled with the filth of worthlessness. All too few people realize how slavery and racial segregation have starved the soul and wounded the spirit of the black man. The whole dirty business of slavery was based on the premise that the black man was a thing to be used, not a person to be respected. 1,000 times a week, the black man in American slavocracy heard the words nigger, no count, no good. He was told even by so-called white preachers that he was designed by God to be a hewer of wood and a drawer of water, and that it was a sin to desire to be free. But the old Negro preacher told the slave, you are not niggers. You are not slaves. You are not hewers of wood and drawers of water. You are God's children. Walk therein as bold soldiers, and wear the word as a loose garment. You are God's children. Therefore, when we think of black power, we think first of the black man recognizing himself as a man and as a child of God, made just a little lower than God, and crowned with glory and honor. I don't have anybody here to pray with me. In the book of Genesis, the first chapter, and the 21st and the 27th verse, it is written, and God created man in his own image. In the image of God, in his image, God created he him. Male and female created he them. And it can be rightly added, brown and yellow, black and white, created he them. On Mars Hill, the Apostle Paul said that from one source, from one common stuff, from one blood, God made all men to dwell upon the face of the earth. It was the Apostle Peter who famously declared that God is no respecter of persons. Therefore, when we think of black power, we think of the black man recognizing himself as a child of God and a member of the human family. Thus, we do not think of black power as black nationalism, for that means pro-black. It means the same thing that the southern white man Otto Banjo, the great African scholar, takes the position that many of the black nationalists who are angrily demanding a further separation of the races in America have black faces but yellow hearts. They are black on the outside, but inside they have a yellow streak. As the saying goes, a mile wide. To quote Lewis Martin from an article in the Detroit Courier, that's Dr. Otto Banjo insists that some of these black nationalists are suffering from a deep and sometimes subconscious feeling of inferiority, which they are trying to cover up with tough talk and wild rhetoric. He insists further that they are running away from, I'm going to be through in a minute, they are running away from competition with the white man. Or more specifically, trying to escape intellectual competition with the white man. The nationalists do not object to competition with the white man in the areas where they feel confident of their activities or abilities. Dr. Otto Banjo further insists and cites that most black nationalists will readily accept competition with the white man in the field of athletics or even in the field of sex, for he feels more confident in these areas. You're not agreeing with me. Their sense of inferiority shows in faith, however, when the competition involves a contest between white and black brains. In short,
what?
When it comes to matters of muscles, the nationalists are full of courage. And when it comes to matters of mind, the nationalists show signs of cowardice. But it has been undeniably proven that the Negro can compete in the field of brains. Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois, Thurgood Marshall, one of the members of the United States Supreme Court, Robert Weaver, Walter White, Adam Powell, Dr. Lawless, scores of other men, Dr. Benjamin May, Richard Wright, Langston Hughes, and thousands of other Negroes have stood up ably and competed with other men, no matter what that color was, in the field of brain. I wish I had somebody here to pray with me. As Christians, we are committed to integration. The first Christian church was an integrated church. The church at Antioch was integrated. It regarded persons as persons. In that church was Barnabas. In that church was Simon, called Niger, the black man, and Lucius of Cyrene, who was also an African. It was an integrated church, and therefore it regarded persons as persons. Black power means to be regarded by all men as God's child and a man. We think of black power, we think of footing. And when we think of footing, we think of economic strength and economic security. It is reported that although the black man is still at the bottom of the economic ladder, his annual and collective income is upwards of $30 billion today. This gives him a considerable buying power that can make the difference between profit and loss in businesses. I'm going to soon be through. You ought to pray with me a little while. When we think of black power, we think of black people working together to achieve political and economic strength, to achieve their legitimate goals. In his book, Tell It Like It Is, Chuck Stone said, we must have more marching. We must march every day right down to the city hall and register and become voters. If you march and you are not a registered voter, you are a phony. We must march every day for jobs, hammering away at the iron curtain of racial exclusion, with so many companies and industries in our city and country that have lured between us and complete, you understand, security. We must march every day to protest and protest and protest until our cities and our mayors decide there's no place any longer in our society for bigots in our midst. We must march every day for protests of the black ghetto of houses which stunt the healthy, flowering of our children. We must raise every kind of legitimate and constitutional hell we can until America recognizes that all America, 22 million black men, women, and children were created equal in the eyes of God. I'm going to let you go when I tell you this. In summary, I would define black power to mean we must know that we are God's children. If there's somebody beside you asleep, wake them up and let them hear the sermon. They need to hear it too because they don't know too much about their own history. Somebody said if you want to hide something from a Negro, put it in a book. If there is any meaning at all to black power, I said and I repeat, in summary and in definition, we mean we must know that we are God's children. Proud black men and women, creative, resourceful, productive, working for unity among ourselves, with a sense of political, social, humanity. We've got to stop this foolishness of feeling that other folks good are better than black folks good. We must grow out of going to another place because the other people can sell it a nickel cheaper. That makes you too cheap. For one nickel, you are selling your self-respect and selling the job of your sons and daughters. I wish I had somebody here to pray with me tonight. We must control the businesses. If black power mean anything in our community, we must not only do that, we must control the education. You got to hear me a little while here. We must control the education in our community. I don't mean just teach. I mean control from the board of education who make the policy for what goes on in the Negro community. You don't hear me? We must learn to control the banking in our community. We must put in black banks. For no bank can exist unless it has federal backing and federal insurance. No matter what it is, black or white, it is looked at the white bank doesn't have anything but federal protection. And the Negro bank must by law. We must control the banking in the Negro ghetto. That is all. We must control the police. Police in our community. I don't mean just riding down the car. I mean to get up there with the commissioner while the decisions are being made as to what police will do. We must control the police in the black community. We must control the jobs. You don't hear me? We must control the garbage. Removing children and the people who work in these because you don't realize it, but removing the garbage involves billions of dollars. You don't hear me? We must control construction in our community. We must build buildings that are being built where we live. You don't hear me tonight? We must learn to respect and trust one another. I better say that again. But this is one of our main handicaps. We are suspicious of each other.